Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on list.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Middle hour of three on a Saturday afternoon. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Willie P. in the building. Hope you're enjoying yourself on a college football Saturday. Also an Atlanta Braves Saturday. Braves and Dodgers game number 6 of the NLCS. We'll get back into that a little bit coming up at 1:20. Also get you once again deeper into Georgia and Alabama. We'll let you hear from Kirby Smart. Again, if you're just joining us, Nick Saban has been cleared to coach tonight. He received his third consecutive negative COVID test after testing positive Wednesday for COVID-19. He is asymptomatic, and SEC rules stipulate that because of the fact that he is asymptomatic, if you get tests on 3 days in a row, all 24 hours apart, you're able to be on the sidelines to compete. The SEC put out a statement about that a little bit less than 15, 20 minutes ago regarding Saban's inclusion in the game. And here's kind of what it says. Upon receiving a notification from Alabama of their COVID-19 test result involving Nick Saban, the SEC office provided and reviewed the COVID-19 management requirements, and they emphasize the need to comply with all local and state health policies. Consistent with the conference's requirements, they've utilized the authorized laboratory in processing and reporting. 3 tests 24 hours apart is necessary to satisfy the requirements, and basically they have done that in order to allow Nick Saban to coach tonight for Alabama against Georgia. So at least all of the intermittent variables between those two things will go out the window if Georgia does pull off the upset tonight. Bama fans can't say, well, we didn't have Nick Saban on the sidelines, so at least that part of it has been satisfied, and he will be on the sidelines for Bama tonight. Looking at the college football scoreboard, it looks like this. Clemson, a 24-7 lead on Georgia Tech. Clemson dodging a bullet. Their leading tackler almost got thrown out of the game for targeting Baylen Specter, but that targeting call was reversed via video review, so he stays in the football game. Clemson has the football again midway second quarter with a 17-point lead. It's Miami 7, Pittsburgh nothing. Auburn, a 9-7 lead on South Carolina midway second quarter. And the surprise of the day is in Knoxville, Tennessee. Kentucky with a 17-0 lead on Tennessee. They just kicked the field goal after Tennessee's third interception thrown of the ball game. Jarrett Garantano was benched after throwing 2 picks, including one that was returned for a touchdown. JT Stroud has replaced him. He promptly threw a pick. Kentucky catches in with a field goal on that drive. Again, 6:18 to play second quarter. That game taking place again in Knoxville. Later on today, of course, it's North Carolina, Florida State, A&M, Mississippi State, and of course that Alabama-Georgia game, which we'll talk more about coming up in about 15 minutes. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P. We'll be getting more of your phone calls and thoughts about that game coming up 15 minutes from right now. We'd love to hear from you, and also would love to hear from you via that same number on the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line on Twitter, at Willie P. Style. That's I-E-P Style. We'll talk some NFL, though, right now with a Week 6 edition of the NFL Ground and Pound. So this is what this week looks like in the NFL. Bunch of different games to kind of chew on. The still fraudulent one-loss Chicago Bears take on the Carolina Panthers this week, who are ahead of us in the NFC South. Can't hate it. Just saying. That's the way it works. Packers and Bucks, Browns and Steelers which is interesting for one note that we'll talk about in just a moment. Bengals and Colts, Broncos and Patriots, although that game was kind of thrown into a little bit of a wrench earlier this week because of COVID-19. The Jaguars now dealing with a COVID-19 issue for their game coming up this weekend as well. They have closed their facility following a positive COVID-19 test. They are scheduled to play host to our next opponent, which is the Detroit Lions tomorrow at TIAA Bank Field on Sunday. The team still said, though, in a statement, that they are planning to play the game. They will go through their walkthrough scheduled today virtually. And he also was given a positive test, at least with the player who had tested positive, to confirm the result. Basically, it's a practice squad player, so because of that, they are taking the abundance of caution mode there very, very seriously. Patriots-Broncos was also kind of thrown with a wrench involving COVID-19. We'll talk about that here coming up in a moment, but Packers and Bucks is very interesting as well. And Browns-Steelers, the first game for Myles Garrett since he had his suspension for slamming his helmet against Mason Rudolph. He spoke yesterday about playing on the field against Pittsburgh for the first time since that incident.
We'll see when we play. But, I mean, their head coach said they're past it. You know, we're past that as a team, and you know, we're ready to go out there and play ball. I mean, we're the Browns. I expect to get booed, especially when there's any fans in the stadium. So let's go out there and do it like we would against any team.
And all the whistle. Old NFC Central matchup involving Green Bay and Tampa Bay coming up on Sunday as well. It'll be Tampa Bay's Tom Brady going up against Aaron Rodgers, and of course a duel of scintillating quarterbacks. Brady playing for the first time since the fateful Thursday night game where the Bears beat them and Tom forgot how many downs there were. Brady talked about how pivotal this game is for his Tampa squad.
When you win, you know, you're trying to learn and trying to get better, trying to improve, understanding that this process is going to, you know, we're going to be working that way through the whole season. You know, the reality is just we haven't had a lot of time together, you know, so we're trying to make up for it. And every game is going to be valuable for us, and every practice is valuable, and every walkthrough. So I think everyone's getting more comfortable and confident as the weeks go. But at the same time, we got to win these games because these all count the same as the ones later in the year. So, you know, we obviously lost first game of the year. We won three straight. You know, we're in a close game, and we got to make the plays to win the close games. And, you know, this game here is hugely important because it's against a very good football team. We're playing at home. We're going to have to play a great game.
Is that TB12 making excuses? Because I don't think TB12 would be making those type of statements if he was in the same room / organization as Bill Belichick. That's a lot of fodder for a guy who, again, sits at 3-2. And again, I'm not trying to sit here and spike from a less than ivory tower here with the Falcons. We've got our own issues. No one's denying that. But I'm sitting here and looking at the Buccaneers and saying they ain't worth all the sauce, at least for that perspective, especially with the way that we saw Green Bay just run all up and down the field with no impunity. And even with guys who, like we said afterwards on that Monday night game, who basically aren't household names. I think Aaron Rodgers is somebody who you look at and you say, if there's anybody playing better football than him this season, it's Russell Wilson. But that's the list. That's it. Those two guys are basically 1 and 2 for the NFL MVP, as it were. And speaking of Aaron Rodgers, man who plays running back for his team, Jamal Williams, decided to throw a little bit of bulletin board material on the floor when talking about Tom Brady.
Here's let's set the record straight. Whose quarterback is better, yours or Ronald Jones?
Come on, man. I'm pretty sure my quarterback knows what fourth down is. You know what I mean? He's too smart for that. We never be in that type of situation. Because A-Rod, you know, he always prepared, always laying out the clock. Always, we got so many people who are just too ready to go. But we've always been in those type of pressure situations before. You know what I mean? So I just feel like it's just natural for us to just be on top of everything and just go ball. But yeah. I would never expect that from my boy 12, ever. You know what I mean?
That's not something that I would say with the guy on the other sideline being who he is. Just saying, Tom Brady's got that gene inside of him that Michael Jordan said during The Last Dance, where it's like, at that point, I felt disrespected, or whatever the line was. At that point, I took it personally. So I'm just sitting here and saying, if you're Jamal Williams, maybe you hold your tongue a little bit. I think it's okay for somebody like me, who's a nobody, to say that. But if you're a player, you better believe that Tom Brady's got rabbit ears and heard that, and that's probably plastered all over the locker by Bruce Arians in Tampa Bay. Elsewhere in the league, it's Le'Veon Bell making the decision to go to Kansas City with a $1.69 million total this season that he'll make from KC, which will offset the $6 million that he's owed by the New York Jets. I found it rather interesting that the three teams he was looking at were actually the Jets' next three opponents as things continue to tumble out of control for Adam Gase and that dysfunctional franchise. Despite looking less than spectacular last week, Handsome Jimmy is going to start this week for San Francisco. Jimmy Garoppolo, who was benched in favor of C.J. Beathard last week against Miami, cleared and full go Sunday night against the Rams. That is a Sunday night game. Will not be on our air because we have Atlanta United. Also, the Dallas Cowboys play Monday night. That will be on our air as Arizona and Dallas will take on each other as part of a Monday night doubleheader that also is preceded by that big Chiefs game on Monday night against the Buffalo Bills. But Andy Dalton will get his first start as a Dallas Cowboy to try and keep Dallas's ship upright after the injury that took place to Dak Prescott last weekend, the horrific injury that took place in that game against the Giants. Here's Michael Gallup from the Dallas receiving core on the fact that it's now Dalton's team.
Well, I think the best thing you can do is just, you know, obviously keep Dak in the loop. Got to send him some text, go over there and see him, make sure he's still got his spirits up. But at the same time, yeah, you gotta put all your focus on, you know, Andy. You know, he's the guy now. You got to make sure that he's, you know, trustworthy, you know, of knowing that you want him on the field with us. But definitely you don't just forget about Dak. I mean, he got us to this point. He's been doing this, you know, 4 or 5 years. So send him a text. Go see him when you can. Make sure he's staying up.
When you think about how well Prescott has played this year, Prescott actually leads the NFL with 1,856 passing yards despite missing a quarter and a half of the victory over the Giants after suffering that compound fracture and dislocated right ankle. His 9 touchdowns, by the way, tied for 9th in the NFL. Cowboys 3rd in the league with 32.6 points per contest. That is the bar that Andy Dalton has to try and match and possibly raise this week against Arizona. Another trip to the end zone for Clemson. They have taken a commanding 31-7 lead on Georgia Tech. It's Auburn 16, South Carolina 7, Miami 14, Pittsburgh nothing. Kentucky still leading 17-0 on Tennessee as they approach halftime in Knoxville. We'll come back, talk a little bit more about Georgia, Alabama, and also the Braves. Can they win their first National League pennant in 21 years tonight? Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and also on radio.com. Willie P is in the building. Sports Radio 92.9 The Game. Also at radio.com. Love to hear you chime in at 404-741-0929. How into this Georgia-Alabama game are you? And also, how you feeling about the Braves tonight? We'll talk about both of those in this space right now. Coming up about 20 minutes from right now, the newly named segment formerly known as the Falcons Big Segment, which we'll get into coming up at 1:40 as we break down Falcons-Vikings for you, which takes place tomorrow. Part of our stellar weekend lineup here at 92.9 The Game. We have Nick Cale following me at 3 o'clock. Tanitra Batiste and Jarvis Davis will go from 6 until 7. And also tomorrow, Sam and Greg wake you up from 6 until 9. We will have the Wade Ford Tailgate Show from 9 until 11. And then the countdown to kick off with Chris Goforth and Harry Douglas, Wes Durham, Dave Archer with the call from a socially distanced Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the game that takes place in Minnesota, Falcons and Vikings at 1 o'clock. Updating you on the college football scoreboard briefly, Kentucky 17, Tennessee 7, as the Volunteers have finally found the end zone and woken up in their home building. Bo Nix and the Auburn Tigers lead South Carolina 16-7, though Nix has thrown a pair of picks on the day. South Carolina driving in plus territory, trying to get one before halftime, and as Caleb Johnson mentioned, commanding lead for Clemson against Georgia Tech. 31-7 is the score in favor of the number one Tigers. That game is late in the second quarter. Number 2 Alabama, number 3 Georgia tonight. First off, I'm not going to sit here and say that I'm not into the college football this year, but something about not being able to go to a game has had me struggle to this point to be as into it as I normally am. I know that they are allowing fans in some places, but someone in the tax bracket that I am, it's made very, very more difficult with the reduced capacity to try and get my way into the building. Today, you know, I would have probably tried to find a way to drive west to Tuscaloosa after my 3 o'clock shift ends and possibly get myself in on a scalper's ticket, but looked at that tonight and said, ha-ha, no, sir. So because of that, I find it a little bit, I don't want to say a bit of a downer, but I do feel like the game tonight, you wonder if it will live up to the hype of the rest of the Georgia-Alabama games we've seen in recent memory. You go all the way back to 07, first time Saban coached against this group at Alabama, and you had that dramatic victory for Georgia with Matthew Stafford. Of course, since then, it's been all Bama. Five in a row they've won against Georgia, including a couple of SEC championships, a national championship game as well. The one thing, too, that kind of stands out when you look at Alabama, though, is that this probably isn't the same kind of Alabama that at least has been built by Nick Saban over the course of the last couple of years. You're used to thinking that this team is built on defense, but instead it's built on offense. But regardless, Kirby Smart says, this Crimson Tide team is tough.
Got a lot of respect for these guys. Haven't worked there for a long time. Got a really good program. Got good, really good football players. Physical at the both offensive and defensive lines. Extremely physical and extremely big.
Now, I know that they haven't played a defense that really has a pulse this season, but Mac Jones is doing things that are hard to do when you play against air. For example, in the month of October, he has completed 81% of his passes. That is astounding. And again, that's only in the two games against A&M and Ole Miss. He completed 87% of his passes against the Rebels, including a pair of touchdowns in the victory, 63-48. He's had a lot of help from Najee Harris and had a lot of help from his receiving corps. Look, I didn't mean to say this in a negative way last year about Tua Tagovailoa, but I do find it curious that Tua hasn't started yet because he had a better wide receiving corps at Alabama than he's ever going to have in the NFL. It's not as good as it was last year for the Crimson Tide, but it's still pretty darn good when you think about the fact that you can roll Waddle, Smith, and Mechie across the board. And Mechie is somebody who's just about coming into his own. But Waddle is going to be the first receiver taken off the board by, I think, anybody's account that you look at the NFL draft. And I feel like Devontae Smith will not be far behind from him. And you're seeing Najee Harris play some of the best running back of anybody in the SEC. But like I said, they have not seen a defense like Georgia has. Kirby Smart talking about what makes this Alabama offense roll.
Well, what's made them succeed well is players. They've got really good players. Sark does a great job of implementing a system that the kids can execute. It's based on really hard guys to cover outside. They've got, you know, one of the probably the best back in the country, if not one of the best backs in the country. You know, Najee runs the ball really hard, and they're massive up front.
The thing about Georgia is that I felt it was important for them to see some adversity last week in the first half against Tennessee. Look, the Auburn game, let's call it what it is, Auburn came in, laid an egg. And while Arkansas took advantage of a first half that Georgia kind of looked less than stellar, it was a situation that played out in my mind more so the fact that it was first game without really much hitting in training camp. Georgia tried to find their sea legs, and once they did, they played well against an overmatched squad. So I really feel like Tennessee, that first half, was the first real adversity for them. And then with the halftime adjustments that were made, you saw Georgia firing on all cylinders. And I think a lot of that also came out and was played out on defense. Like, for example, Azeez Ojulari is a man. Like, that's somebody you look at and you say, he is a load to block. Malik Herring on the other side, also just a completely difficult guy to handle. And I know that we talk a lot about this Georgia defense more as the collective in terms of what they do as a full side as opposed to individual players, but you're starting to see some guys make names for themselves, like Aziz Ojulari and N'Kobe Dean. Richard LeCount had already made a name for himself, and I think were surprised a lot of people when he came back, but I feel like one of the reasons he did come back is because he knew what was around him. And I feel like a guy like J.R. Reed, you know, last year probably didn't get drafted as highly or didn't get selected as highly as many thought he would because of the fact that that was a very, very loaded defensive back class last year that went into the NFL draft. And I think LeCount is going to benefit from that this upcoming season. And you have guys like Stokes and Campbell and Daniel who are able to be physical against those Bama receivers. And I feel like that'll be a very different scenario for Jones than he's faced in each of these first three games for the Alabama Crimson Tide. Of course, though, when you look at the way that these two teams match up, the one thing that comes to mind when you think about Alabama is how they're able to adjust to what this Georgia offense is going to bring. They're going to want to run the football. And I think the questions continue to be raised about what Stetson Bennett is as a quarterback for Georgia. And I'm not going to sit here and say that he has the whole game without impunity. But I do feel like he has the respect of not only Kirby Smart, Todd Monken, and this locker room. And Kirby Smart said as much earlier this week.
He doesn't try to be someone else. He doesn't try to artificially lead. He doesn't try to fake it. He never did that while he was trying to compete for the job, and he hasn't done it since he got the job. Stetson is who he is, and you know, I think the skill players on offense and the offensive line, they all trust and rally around him because they know he understands what we're trying to do offensively, and he can put them in good situations. And the defensive players have all, you know, seen him play and know what Stetson's about. So he does it his own way, which is really by doing very little in terms of trying to vocally lead. He leads by example, and he encourages guys, and he helps guys get lined up.
We're going to talk about this with Mike Griffith coming up a little bit less than an hour from right now. He seems to think that Bama wins this game because there's going to be a rematch. You know, I feel like it could go the other way. I feel like Georgia might win this one, and Bama could possibly win a rematch because it's very, very difficult to beat this team twice. Of course, the one thing that is going into this game that is above all others is the fact that Nick Saban has not lost a game to a man who has assisted underneath him. Of course, he extended that record with the victory over Jimbo Fisher and also the victory over Lane Kiffin the last 2 weeks. We'll see how tonight goes. Of course, if you've missed the news from earlier today, Nick Saban has tested negative for COVID-19. He will be on the sidelines for Alabama this evening against Georgia. Again, an 8 p.m. kick under the lights at Bryant-Denny Stadium. Braves tonight against the Dodgers. It'll be Max Fried going up against Walker Buehler. I did want to do a little bit on this before we head to our next timeout, just because of the fact that the Braves are on the precipice of something that hasn't happened in this city in 21 years. And I do want to at least acknowledge the fact that there are a lot of Braves fans who felt after last night and even after the 15-3 loss that a lot of the things that have been emblematic of Atlanta sports are starting to befall the Braves. Momentum between games, guys, I don't believe it to be a thing. I just don't. And I feel like too much is made about how resilient this group has been when they've had games where they've performed lesser than expected. This season, they have always bounced back. This season draws no comparison or parallels to anything that happened before this year. I think Brian Snicker is a better manager than he has been. I feel like last night he managed the game completely perfectly. But so many times, and again, we talked about this on the Facebook Live last night. If you're not watching our Facebook.com/929TheGame recaps, you're missing out because if you're sitting there and listening to that Dodgers-centric garbage that's on TV, you're missing out on some pretty cool Braves coverage with us at Facebook.com/929TheGame. But one thing that I did say is that too many times in not only the recent past, but over his tenure as manager, the Braves players have bailed out poor managerial decisions from Brian Snicker. They have won despite him. I feel like last night they lost despite the fact that he made basically every defensible position in a game that required more decision-making than any because of the nature of it being a bullpen game. I feel like he pushed all the right buttons. I would have wanted Will Smith in there against the lefty no matter what, because I feel like he would have been my best opportunity of the guys that were remaining there to try and get a left-hander out. Did not happen. Of course, he ended up staying in the ball game to see the next hitter, which was Will Smith, and then the three-run homer befalls the Braves, and they lose 7-3. But make no mistake about it, I want to see this group tonight ride the wave that Max Fried's going to provide for them. If they can get some runs early against Walker Buehler and then ride that left arm of Max Fried, they'll be hoisting the National League pennant for the first time since 1999. 404-741-0929 is how you get in touch with me, Willie P. That's the Solomon Brothers Diamond text line, and also wherever you might be listening to us on the phones. We'll talk a little bit more about the college football Saturday, give you an update of where some of those scores are at halftime, and the renamed Falcons Big Segment. That's a brand new name. We'll tell you that. And also what the coaching change, what type of impact that has on the Falcons as they get ready to take on the Vikings tomorrow here on Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and Radio.com. One thing I did want to add in on the Braves before we move on to talk about the Falcons. Christian Pache is going to be your opening day starting center fielder for the Braves in 2021. And either Ender Inciarte is not going to be on this team, or he is going to be one darn expensive reserve outfielder at around $8 million per. Not a decision that I'm looking forward to Alex Anthopoulos having to make. Do I start Inciarte because of the money, or do I trade him because of the fact that he just has no spot on this roster, and then also have to eat up some of that money to force another team to take him on? Trevor Lawrence is putting on a clinic, by the way, right down the street. 52-7 Clemson leads as they approach halftime. He has thrown 5 first-half touchdowns. Okay, we get it. You're good. Man. I still say, you know, he'd look good in black, red, and white next year. And for anybody who wants to get into now that discussion, as we segue into the what used to be called the Falcons Big Segment and now is called the Saturday Walkthrough, the Falcons Saturday Walkthrough. Ta-da! We have a new name. Thanks again to Marshall Parker 2 weeks ago for brainstorming that one with me. But the big question, of course, centers around the money and what exactly is the best case scenario for this team. And that's something I talked about last hour with Jarvis Davis. Is the best case scenario for this team in its final 11 games to go on a run, say 9-2, 10-1, 11-0, retain Raheem Morris and, you know, have some continuity going into next year, or is it blow everything up? I feel like the blow everything up scenario is keen on a lot of people's minds just because of the fact that they want to see some sort of, again, pound of flesh or signal from the organization that what has taken place over the last 3.5 years is unacceptable. And again, I think the move to dismiss both Quinn and Dimitroff gives you that. But part of that equation, I think, revolves around who's starting at quarterback in 2021. And as we've talked about, the moves that would take place if you have Matt Ryan on your squad or want to not have Matt Ryan on your squad are prohibitive. The salary cap number for 2021 with Matt Ryan is $40.9 million. They will have a $44 million cap charge, or basically what is termed as dead money, for Ryan if they trade him before next June 2nd. Now, you could try to trade him or cut him with a post-June 1 designation, but many teams are not want to do that from the standpoint of a post-June 1 designation because they just assume would wait for you to release that player and not give up anybody. That's kind of the situation that took place with Cam Newton last year. It's very, very difficult to see a team take on one of these contracts and in my mind, there really isn't a team that fits that billing. I think anybody who wants to change quarterbacks in 2021, if the Falcons are part of that group, maybe. But the other ones, teams like the New York Jets and others, are going to want a full reset when it comes to whether or not they go with a veteran or they try to restart and get one of the top three guys, whether it's Lawrence, whether it's Lance, whether it's Justin Fields, depending on how he looks this year with Ohio State. As far as the game on the field tomorrow, you do get Julio Jones, which I think is a very big impact. How does that impact the receiving game? Because I feel like he kind of has a little bit of the spotlight on him too. And not to be overly critical, but I need Julio Jones to be somebody who is not just a guy who draws coverage for the sake of his reputation. Like, I need to see numbers. We haven't seen numbers from him. We haven't seen a game that is befitting of his contract status and stature for a long time. We haven't even seen him on the field the last 2 weeks. And again, I know that's not his fault, but I think too many times he's tried to push it through and make it worse. I feel like playing that first half against Green Bay was a mistake. I feel like you would have had him last week if he doesn't play that game, because him trying to ratchet it up without practicing for a full week against Green Bay, I think was a mistake for this Falcons squad. And a lot of times you have to save the player from himself in that regard. Falcons are playing a Vikings team that will not have Dalvin Cook in the mix. Their backup running back is a guy by the name of Alexander Mattison. You only know his name if you play fantasy football hardcore, because you probably picked him up this week. But outside of that, he is really somebody who has no rapport alongside him. They do have Amir Abdullah on the roster as well, the former Detroit Lion. But you take a big, big step down from Cook to what's left in the running back stable for Minnesota. And it falls upon the right arm of Kirk Cousins, who didn't have a good day last year against the Atlanta Falcons when the two teams met in the opening day of the season. But the one thing we did see is that the Minnesota defense, led by head coach Mike Zimmer, who of course you know was part of this organization, they swarmed Matt Ryan. They suffocated the Falcons, and they shut down that offense. We only scored 12 points last year. And they were able to ride Dalvin Cook to victory on a day that Kirk Cousins looked very, very ordinary. They've got an amazing set of pass rushers when you think about Yannick Ngakoue. I know they will not have Danielle Hunter as part of their arsenal, which I think is, again, another feather in the cap for the Falcons. But they do also have physical corners and a pretty good linebacking core as well. Problem is, Falcons' problems haven't been on offense all the more. It's been that defense. And they do get some defensive spots back from last week. You will not have Tack McKinley. You will not have Jalen Hawkins. But this is about as close to whole as the Falcon defense has played this season. When you think about the fact that the only real missing pieces are McKinley, rather, Jalen Hawkins, and DeMonte KZ, who's on IR because of the torn Achilles. So when you look at the Falcons tomorrow, I'm curious to see what impact Raheem Morris has on this defense. The one thing I do feel like that is something that is a feather in the cap is that Raheem Morris does not come from a traditional defensive-only background. The big problem I've always had with defensive-minded coaches is they spend all their time in the defensive meeting room and never any in the offensive side of the room. And I don't know this to be true from Dan Quinn personally, but given the way that he talks about the offense and the way that this team had played, he basically gave full rein to Dirk Koetter and let him run the show. And the same thing is true, I believe, of Sarkisian and Shanahan before him, because it did not look like he had much input on those decisions, and I think to his detriment. Raheem Morris has put a different spin on it because he has been in those offensive meeting rooms. Again, inexplicably was placed on the offensive side of the football when he first got here to Atlanta and then moved to the defensive side midway last year when they promoted him and Jeff Ulbrich to the co-defensive coordinators. the fact that Raheem, I think, will have a hand in both sides of the football's game plan is a big, big plus for this Falcon team. And one thing that Dante Fowler said earlier this week is that they were made to be uncomfortable. And I do feel that that's a good thing for this Falcons team. Too often, they played a type of football that lacked accountability. They played a brand of football that, in my mind, looked like guys who weren't afraid of going to the bench. Fowler, of course, a first-year player on this Falcons squad. Here is him talking about difference in mood this week under Raheem.
Raheem just doing it his way a little bit, you know, just adding his little spice to it and things like that, but it hasn't really been different. If anything, you know, just the intensity is wrapped up a little bit more. You know, Raheem is, you know, just kind of making us a little bit uncomfortable and, you know, making us be able to practice really well and practice and things like that. So Sunday, we won't be new to anything.
And I feel like that's all a good thing. And like we said before, this is a palatable part of the schedule. You've got Denver, who hasn't had their quarterback for much of the year as part of this stretch. You get another opportunity to see Carolina, which I think you are a better team than Carolina, but Carolina played better than you last week. I feel like you can go toe-to-toe with Minnesota and Detroit both. But it's a matter of actually getting the job done that sits in the Falcons' hands. And as far as the Matt Ryan discussion goes, look, I want to see change too. But I think the one thing we all say is you have to think about the matter-of-factness of the moment when it comes to Ryan's contract situation. Because I feel like if you try to move him, you're going to take a lump for another year or two because your salary cap is going to be constrained. And I do feel like you will have yourself a situation with a young quarterback where they're playing with a group of players that will probably want to move on if they're going to play for a rookie quarterback. The one thing that is good about possibly changing the reins at QB is you have a pretty stout offensive line this year. I think that's something that we haven't really talked about. I know that there have been some protection issues, but for the most part, this group has stayed intact and stayed healthy. And I do feel like there are ways to use that offensive line a different way if you get a more athletic quarterback under center or behind center, somebody other than Ryan. But if anything, for the last 11 games of this season, I need him to step up and look like the MVP. I need him to make the kinds of plays where even if the offensive coordinator is not running the football late, if they're going to throw the football, make the plays, execute the plays that give you a chance to win the football game. We haven't seen that from Matt Ryan at any point all season. Willie P in the building, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game, 92.9thegame.com and the radio.com app. Half hour from right now, we'll talk Georgia, Alabama with Mike Griffith of Dog Nation and the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. We'll tell you what's happening across the sports world coming up next as we kick off the 2 o'clock hour. Willie P here with you on a Saturday, Sports Radio 92.9 The Game and radio.com.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.